Hello and welcome to the Building Tech Teams podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to hiring experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you and enjoy the show. Awesome, we've got Vara Davidson here. She is the delivery team lead at CDL Software. Vara, pleasure to have you on the show and in person as well, which is an added bonus for the Venturi's Voice show. It's great to have you on. You've got such an interesting story, interesting background, obviously very familiar with recruitment and sales in general. So hopefully we won't get too lost in talking in familiarized jargon that none of our technical listeners will be able to understand.
Hopefully we'll be all right, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll try and avoid that temptation. But just to draw some context, Vara, would you mind sort of giving us a brief overview of your background and experiences?
Yeah, of course. So I graduated university and had no idea what I wanted to do. I just knew that I wanted to earn some money. So a friend at the time said, well, just try recruitment. So I did and just applied for a few positions and ended up working in the oil and gas market in Aberdeen, which was great because of my accent. I then moved on, started working with the public sector. Moved on again to work with sports nutrition companies. That was very up and coming. And I got to the stage where I thought, it's just not for me anymore. I wasn't getting out and meeting people as much as I wanted. And I sort of just grew disillusioned with recruitment. So at the time, I then went to work for my dad in construction. And it was not as fast paced as I thought it might have been. And at the time Brexit hit, merchants, suppliers put the prices up by 25% on the day of Brexit. And I thought, no, I can't do this. I need something a bit more exciting than building extensions. So started working with what was at the time a small tech company in Manchester city centre. As a salesperson, so as a membership manager on the phone. And throughout my time there, I moved into the head of people position. They didn't really have an internal recruitment department, and so I set that up for them and realised that I didn't really want to sit there and just maintenance manage that moving forward. They had a vacancy at the time for their development team for a project manager, and I thought, okay, well, it's a bit more interesting than what I'm currently doing, which is sitting managing three people. And internal recruitment is, again, quite a lot slower sometimes than external. So I thought, right, okay, well, why not? And my CEO at the time, don't think he really wanted to pay for somebody else to come into the business through recruitment. So said, right, okay, well, you go and try this. You'll do things. That's fine. So moved over to this project management position with the development team internally there and just sort of took off from there, really. Within a couple of months, was promoted to the development team manager position purely based on my management experience with people. And really, I didn't see my career moving forward with those guys, which was a shame. And I moved to CDL, where I'm now delivery team lead.
Amazing. It's an interesting one. So were you actually recruiting for tech roles when you were doing recruitment?
I recruited for senior appointments within IT when I was working with the public sector, so for housing associations and the NHS. So I'd had some experience of what IT included, but it was more infrastructure in that side of things. The public sector, forgive me, anybody who's listening, who's working with those.
Anyway.
Very slow paced, not quick on the uptake, especially of digital. And so it was more of that infrastructure background, really, if I did place people. Whereas I'm now working with, a couple of squads of front end developers. It's completely, completely different. So massive learning curve.
Yeah. Interesting. I think it's a good lesson, I think, for a lot of people, because I find more so than ever, we've certainly covered on this show quite extensively, like my general outlook and concerns with, like, I suppose, a traditional educational system.
Yeah.
And I think that especially for people going into various technical careers, there are always going to be, I suppose, a place where there is a linear approach to some careers, you know, doctors, lawyers kind of are the obvious ones.
Yeah.
But I think for the mass, there is this kind of general sense of confusion, and then you end up kind of stumbling into your first career straight out of university or wherever.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you assume that this is now kind of what I am. And I think that it's inevitable in any organization that you have sort of this bubble mentality that's very easy to kind of get sucked into.
Yeah.
What was the kind of steps that, you know, you took, or any advice that I suppose you could give to kind of manage to keep your head above water, perhaps even earlier than you were able to do so?
Yeah.
You know, to just realize that, you know, it's almost kind of going to become expected, in my opinion, that people do have various careers within their career, and it's not going to be this like linear path of sort of slight progression for the 30 years.
So one of my major fears when I came out of recruitment was, how am I going to keep the amount of money that I'm earning if I'm going to go and learn a completely different industry or trade or whatever it may be? How am I going to be able to live? And I was very, very lucky myself in that when I moved from the head of people position to project manager, that the company was so supportive that I kept the salary that I was on. I think there has to be probably more of an awareness much earlier on about what sort of careers are out there and what sort of skill sets are aligned with certain industries. When the US love salespeople, they absolutely love salespeople. There's so much learning development and so many courses that you can go on. But in the UK, it's almost seen as a bit of a taboo. So how do you move from that to go to something else? I think university didn't do a lot for me in terms of preparing me for a career. I did a degree in history. So what do you do with that? I kept getting asked if I was going to be a librarian. Absolutely not. you know, it's just really, really tough when you're at that stage of life. You've you know, spent so much money going to university, you've had a great time, you come out, what's next? There needs to be more education around what different industries entail. So I'm not technically minded in the slightest. I was never going to be an engineer or a developer. I'm not really creative, so I can't do design. But what I can do is organise people and delegate and ensure that stakeholders are kept up to date and make sure things are just done. And that is project management. So whether that is in construction or tech or healthcare, whatever it may be, that's the sort of softer skill set that I think a lot of recruiters still sometimes would think of as well, rather than, right, you are using AutoCAD and SolidWorks as an engineer, go off and use them and we'll get you a job. What else is there within your personal skill set?
Yeah, it is a preparation thing, because it's not anyone's responsibility, or certainly not an organizational responsibility, to give you that kind of high level perspective on how transferable your skills are.
No.
But no one's being prepared for that, I find. So I think it's almost a grassroots level. It's like, how are we kind of teaching people like the opportunities to go into various skills? I think that if you have someone who gives good advice, like I've got a friend who's done very well at EY, you know, one of the big four consultancies, and he had a mechanical engineering degree and then became an accountant. Right, but there's so many transferable skills between mechanical engineering and accountancy that people would never assume. But he obviously was lucky and got great advice. But and obviously your situation is another example. I just don't know like how to seek it out. And one area that I have kind of identified and are curious about you is, I feel as though the kind of the idea of like mentorship on a one-to-one basis has sort of taken a bit of a nosedive. I think that it's for obvious reasons in a way, because there's been such an emergence of community engagement, like social at scale. But now I think that kind of one-to-one mentorship is really lost, because it becomes sort of a who can yell the loudest and a very intimidating environment to go into these kind of online forums to try and get started.
Yes.
So I kind of get why, you know, it's almost kind of having a counterproductive effect. Anyway, that's just my opinion. I don't agree with that or think that there's that plus other options that we can potentially look at.
Yeah, I think for me, in my experience, there's been two facets to that. So you've got your network and your community and people that you can reach out to. I think my career in recruitment really assisted me in not being afraid in approaching people that I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's through LinkedIn or just going up, you know, at a networking event to a group of people and saying, hi, can I join in your conversation? And just understanding other people's stories, that to me was never a problem. But I know for, you know, a lot of people that it is. And to tackle that, there probably should be more in workplaces, more workshops to try and get people to get out of their comfort zone a bit. You know, it's so cliche and we throw the phrase around all the time. But if you do have social anxiety, which I did, I used to have a lot of anxiety about people that I didn't know and public speaking and, you know, doing things like this. To try and assess them in knowing that, well, what is the worst that could happen? You're going to go up to someone and say, hi, can I have a chat with you? What are they going to say? No to your face. We're British. We don't do that. It's absolutely something that I think needs to be taught on that side of things. But on the mentorship side of things on a one-to-one basis, I am very much someone who I've had a lot of role models and a lot of mentors throughout my career. The most recent probably being the last company that was at, the CTO that I worked for. He knew that I didn't have the background in tech or in development to really understand what was going on. And he really took me under his wing to not only assist me technically, but to really help me understand the market, even just in Manchester, and just to understand where people sat, how projects worked in different organisations, how things used to work and why that maybe should have changed and it has, and where we see things going in the future. From a business perspective, my previous CEO was phenomenal. He's an incredible businessman. And even just to understand his way of working and his personality, which is so different to so many other people, was great. But I think there definitely has to be more of an ask culture around these things, because if you don't ask, you don't get, and that's been my motto since really I was in recruitment.
Yeah, no, it's so true. Interesting. It's bizarre as well. Like, I think maybe it is because this kind of it's almost like a safeguard to be behind the screen or to be behind email or to be behind this. You know, I like the fact that, you know, you were motivated to come to the offices today and, you know, actually have this conversation, right? Yeah. But that's a great example of, I just tend to find, whether it's a generational thing or whether it's just become like a culture of mass, that people are scared to kind of do that, which is ironic because now we have more opportunities than ever to just contact whoever the hell you want.
So many different communication tools, but yeah. I think it's about how you use them. So when I started in recruitment, LinkedIn was great because not a lot of recruiters have really cottoned on to the fact that LinkedIn could be used to cold, you know, get in touch, cold call, maybe not cold call, but get in touch with people that you wouldn't have previously, to send a really personal message. And I still think with things like LinkedIn that is lost, because you'll send out emails or you'll send out connection requests that aren't personal, even putting someone's name just understanding a bit about what they do in a message is going to get much more traction than random ads. I think there's so many people now that we have the ability to hide behind these forms of communication, and that maybe don't have the same level of confidence or are as extrovert as other people, that it's really, really difficult to do. And there's now so many people in the world, you know, it didn't used to be like that. So how do we tackle that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think you mentioned in your notes before we came over, like, support systems, you know, and actually how to ask for help. So obviously we're alluding to the fact that, like, you should just do it, you know, I think just going directly towards people. But, you know, again, people like, I suppose, detail. So how would you actually approach someone? Is it just as simple as, hi, I'm explaining your situation, you know, and send out a message, can I give you a coffee? Is it literally as simple as that? Just to do
Yeah, although it was tough for me to start that. I was, right. You know, despite I was a very shy teenager, very shy until I got to university. And it was at university when there was just so many people there, and I realised I am going to have to come out of my shell, otherwise I won't thrive. Mm. And it was almost an overnight change, and thought, whatever, right, now I'm just going to throw myself into whatever there is and see what happens. And it was the same in business when I started, because I got quite afraid of the things that I didn't know. But if you don't know something, how do you know about it? You ask. You have to go to somebody and ask. If it's a client or if it's, you know, your boss or whoever, if you don't ask, you're not going to learn anything. Mm. And so for me, it was very much a case of, right, start out small. Start trying to research things that you've heard about or you want to, you know, maybe move into as a career or whatever, and try and find people around you that you know, first of all, that you know and that you can trust, to give you a bit more of a background. After that, maybe friends of friends, acquaintances, people that you're connected with on LinkedIn or through meetups. And it got to the point, and I still get nervous now going to, you know, if it's speaking at an event or going to a large meetup of very technical people, because I know that I'll stick out like a sore thumb. But at the end of the day, people love talking about themselves and what they can do. So if I'm asking somebody else, can you tell me your expertise in X subject? They're going to talk about it because that's what they do. They love it. Can you tell me how you got into, you know, your career that you're in now? Of course they will. You know, I've never come across anybody myself who has been so rude as to say, no, please don't. So it's to me about breaking it up, taking smaller steps, and really, really researching and understanding who these people are and what you want to get out of it. There's no point in starting a conversation with someone that, you know, you're not going to get anything out of if it's not what you're aiming for or what you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you were alluding to the fact that the meetup example, talking with tech people, obviously getting the wheels started with that kind of learning process, especially for someone who had success in a different career, that must have required almost even more so, like, pushing the ego aside to, you know, and actually just going there and being vulnerable, and, you know, and just admitting to people, like, look, I'm brand new at this. And I think in a weird way, it's something I see quite often incorrect, is that people aren't willing to make themselves vulnerable in situations like that and just say, like, you know, I genuinely don't know. I'm here to learn, to listen. Yeah. And actually almost doing that safeguards you against any kind of critique that would otherwise potentially come your way. So, you know, the journey through the transition to go into your new career, was that, I assume there was quite a lot of that at that time where you almost had to kind of really put your ego aside.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There was so much pushback from the dev team themselves when I started as a project manager with them, because I was unknown. I had no idea technically what they were doing, and I was a salesperson. God forbid I set foot in a development team.
Right.
So really, to try and harness that energy that I had to want to be able to do the job and do the job well, and work alongside these people who I knew I had to gain trust from, it was difficult, really, really difficult. The vulnerability piece, there's a special on Netflix that was brought out this year by Brené Brown called The Call to Courage, and it's very much a personal thing. I think you can use it in work, but there's a quote that she says, saying, I'm so dangerous because I love myself so much. And you really have to know what you want and who you are, to be able to then feel that vulnerability and be brave and have courage going into new situations. So I've suffered in the past with mental health issues, anxiety and depression. And it took me a long time personally to come to terms with the fact that it's probably not going to go away. I can manage it, but I'm still a good person. I love who I am, and I'm doing good things in the world. I'm not malicious. I don't hurt people. And that itself made me think, right, okay, well, I'm still me. I'm just in work. So how do I then harness that courage personally to take it into the workplace? We've all got, you know, a bit of an ego, and I'm not sitting here going, yeah, I love myself, I'm the best. I'm never going to be the best. You know, there's so many brilliant people out there. But I do try my hardest. My dad said to me when I was very little, even if you're a bin man, be the best bin man you can be. It doesn't matter what you are, do what you can and be the best at it. And that's something I strive towards every day. So it's about understanding your own vulnerabilities. If you need help, seeking help for them, whether it's, you know, personally or even professionally, but using that to your advantage and knowing that you are a great person, you're doing a great job.
Yeah. When people hear your story, or you know you're in these meetups, or just in general, perhaps people maybe even reaching out to you on LinkedIn and stuff. Like, what are some of the more common questions that you get about perhaps someone who might also be motivated to change career, or just questions in general now? You know, what are they?
Yeah, a lot of people tend to not understand how I've done it and think that I'm quite, I don't know, that I've got some sort of special power, and it's absolutely not the case. A lot of people are quite reluctant and ask how I approached my employer of how to change. The fact of the matter is, I was very lucky, but again, if you don't ask, you don't get. What sort of courses people think they should be going on? Do they have to take a pay cut? Do they have to get, you know, move into, you know, a city centre in order to get all the best jobs available? Those are the main things, but I really think the underlying thing is fear and just wanting to understand that it's okay and I've done it and I've been successful and I'm all right at the end of it. The fact of the matter is, I asked to go in a course. I didn't have to do one to become a project manager. I went onto a Scrum course of my own volition, really, and went from there. But it's completely dependent on how you learn. I don't particularly like classroom training, and I had to go back to that. I think a lot of people are maybe scared about learning on the job. They feel like, because we've had such a culture of, well, if it's not on your CV, if you've not been to uni, if you've not got a degree, if you've not got 4 years experience, you won't get X. And I think with the skills that are necessary now, with the way the market is throughout all industries because of, you know, political unrest or economic unrest, we have to start looking at what else people have. So those are probably some of the more common things that I get asked. But the main one is, how the hell did you do that?
Right, yeah. It's like I said, I think it is driven by fear and uncertainty. I think that, you know, I find that a tough one to advise on personally, because I do think there's two sides to it and how you can kind of pursue with the advice. I think everyone's constantly looking for a silver bullet, right?
Like, oh, 100%.
So everyone wants to go, right, so if you just do this, you know, you'll end up having a, you know, massive house in Old Leeds or whatever, right? And if you just do this, like, you know, I'll tell you this, and then you'll earn this and this and this.
Yeah.
Everyone's like dying for you to say that. And I find it difficult because I know for a fact I've given advice in the past and it's been quite open-ended, and I can see everyone kind of like staring at me thinking, like, you've not really told me much there.
Yeah.
But I know I have.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, people are disgruntled because they want you to tell them exactly what to do. And again, not to bring you back to like the education, but I do think that's the way that we're being taught, is like, here's all the information you need to pass an exam.
Yeah.
Remember it and do it. But that's not practical.
No.
So I find it difficult sometimes to even offer advice. And then you can tell by looking at the person that they're perhaps disgruntled, because I've given them very kind of open-ended advice. But there isn't that silver bullet. And for me, on the receiving end, it's a frustrating thing, because they're just going to go to the next person, perhaps, if they haven't been able to overcome that fear of asking.
Yeah.
You know that they're just going to go to the next person and again wait for a gimme. And I just don't, you know, I just, that, how do you kind of, do you just need to be honest with people? And,
I'm very transparent with everything in my life, really. It's all about hard work. If you're looking for a silver bullet, if you're looking for a way in, or, you know, a quick fix, you're not working hard enough. And there was one of my friends, I've got a few friends that are doctors and surgeons, and they all went to different universities, and they all got told by university on their first day, you are in the top 1% of intelligence level in the country. And to me, that is the most ridiculous thing to ever tell someone, because how's that person going to work hard after that? You think you're already there. So if you're a top biller in recruitment, if you are a CEO in God, I don't even know, a council somewhere. If you're a top delivery lead in, you know, the tech market, whatever it may be, if you think you're the top and you've got that and you just want to step to the next level, but you don't really want to do much to get there, you're not working hard enough. And so frankly, it's there is no silver bullet. What I'm a great believer in what will be will be. The right place at the right time. You have to be brave enough to take the opportunity to say yes.
Yeah. I think you've got to be, it's almost like a more entrepreneurial attitude, I think, that's more determined now, because, you know, our parents' generation, it was very much like you kind of start here, they will kind of show you what to do even throughout work. But obviously it's a completely different situation now, and I think you have to be comfortably uncomfortable now, which means that you just kind of put yourself in a situation, learn as much as you can from that situation, but commit to it whether it makes sense to you or not. Certainly in the early, like, developmental years, I think, you know, I think it's a nice position that we're in the marketplace, that people are comfortable, like, moving around, like, maybe every couple of years. And that's great. But also, I think there's, like, it's not even becoming a couple of years now. People are moving about in, like, 1 year after their first year of ever working. Yeah. And maybe there's empowerment behind that. But in my opinion, what have you offered? What have you actually learned? What have you taken from that situation is more important than, like, A to B and timelines. And I think in order to do that, you have to be comfortably uncomfortable and just go into a situation, learn what you can, and give yourself time to have perspective on your own career. Otherwise, you know, it will seem like a bit of an endless sort of path.
I think you have to have sympathy with yourself. There's no such thing as a perfect career. There's no such thing as a perfect life.
No.
I think there was a statistic a few years ago that I read that millennials are not going to stay in the same job for over 2 years because we want to learn, we want the next thing, we've got a hunger for knowledge. Yeah. And staying somewhere for 10, 15, 20 years is not going to be sustainable moving forward. We've got so much open to us, you know, how easy it is to travel, how easy it is to relocate, how easy it is to move into something else if you want to, if you want to do it. So I completely agree with you, uncomfortably uncomfortable is 100% the phrase that I'd use, but it's about preparing people for that and ensuring that they know that it's okay not to feel 100% all of the time. That's not going to happen.
You've got to enjoy that.
Absolutely. I mean, I thrive on change. So it's I had to really learn to do that. So it's about taking the time to understand yourself and understand your goals in life and know that things will be okay. Just work hard enough for them to be okay.
And now you've kind of come out of the side, you know, you're at CDL. What's the most exciting thing now, having been through that? Are you now in a position? Do you think, like, this will almost be it? Or do you think you may even look at changing potentially down the road again?
I can't plan ahead, you know, dinners for the next week, let alone what's going to happen in my career.
Yeah.
I'm useless like that. CDL itself has been amazing. They're quite an old company in terms of tech, sort of 40 years old, looking at the insurance sector. And I did think when I was, like, you know, going into, oh God, insurance sounds dry, but the solutions that they are providing are incredible, really cutting edge.
Yeah.
And there's so much going on all of the time. So things like data, you know, we're getting more and more aware of what data is and how it's used and how we can use it to people's advantages. For myself, I don't know. I'm always looking for the next thing. What can I learn next? You know, what's my next step up? That's probably the salesperson recruiter and me going, when's my next promotion? Yeah. But how do I move forward? You know, I think there's a that you have to accept that there's a point where you need to stay still for, you know, a year, 2 years, to understand where you're going, what you've learned, and sort of plan and map out what you want to do next. Mm. But at the moment, I'm really enjoying learning more about tech, the people in it, understanding how they work, understanding more about the sector that I work in. It's the first big company that I've worked in for, God, 5 years. So it's lovely just being able to have a big family feel again.
Absolutely. So for those in sort of the Manchester area, I suppose, in general, you mentioned you go to some meetups, events, yeah, and different things. Is there any that you'd recommend for people to check out, or any that you particularly like going to?
I go to different events all the time. It's difficult. I go to a lot of Women in Tech events. I spoke at a Women in Tech event a couple of months ago. I really appreciate those. I think that we're understanding more about, you know, sort of glass ceilings that women have, and just meeting some of the really inspirational people there is brilliant. But some of the off the cuff ones that people will start themselves, it's completely dependent on you and how you want to meet people as well. Some people will set up in you know a game station or an arcade or whatever. Some people sit in KPMG and it'll be quite formal. So just get out there and look and see what there is and just enjoy it.
Absolutely. And of course, as we always do on this show, CDL obviously seems like they've been incredibly good to you. Anyone else interested in seeing what, you know, prosperous careers there are, where can they go and find out more about that?
Absolutely. They can come to myself. They can get in touch with our internal recruiter, Nicola. But we're always on LinkedIn. We're advertising for roles right now. So no matter if you're a DBA, if you're a front-end dev, if you're a team lead, whatever, please do check CDL out.
All right, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Andy. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.